Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Caberti, founder of the Content Marketing Plaza, bringing you 3 new episodes each week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. And before we jump into today's episode, let me ask you a quick question. How much would your life change if you could make 6 figures from your content? Imagine being able to quit your 9-to-5 job, do what you love for a living, and spend more time with your family. That's what we help our students do at the Content Marketing Plaza, an 8-week program that will help you build your way to 6 figures via your content. You can learn more about the Plaza by heading over to contentmarketingplaza.com, which will be in the show notes. All right, let's jump right back into the episode. One of the things about business that people hear very often is that it takes a lot of work to achieve success. And while a lot of people go by that approach and you do have to be very smart and intentional with your work, there is a way to work less and earn more. Today's guest, he has the key for how we can do that. And today's guest, what exactly does he do? Going on this similar theme, he takes the overworked, underpaid person and helps them move to a stage of being unhustled. He works with clients to free up their time, focus their offer, find their most fabulous clients, and facilitate a world-class experience for their clients. In essence, he helps people earn more while working less, which will be the theme of this episode. So today's guest for episode 312 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Phil Newton. Phil, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, that was such a fantastic and energetic welcome. It's a great way to start the new year.
Phil, I'm really happy to have you on the Breakthrough Success Podcast. This is the first episode we are recording in 2019. It does come out a little later, but this is the first one for 2019. Just wanted to mention that. So we have a really great episode here today. I think a lot of people, they feel like they're super busy. They're not sure if it's going anywhere. So really just, I think a lot of this is going to be on focusing the time we're using to really get the results we want. So I know you guys want a lot of that. So we'll just go right into it. Phil, before we really dive deep into that, I'm wondering if you could give us some background and why you started this whole unhustle philosophy.
I can give you the long version, the short version. I think the bit in between is I needed to do it for myself. Like most good ideas, you start with your own problems first and fixing those. It turns out that other people have them as well. My background, the sob story version, is I've got Crohn's disease. I can't work the typical 9-to-5. Even if I wanted to work 9-to-5, just my particular health situation doesn't allow me to do that. Just the quick version of that is that it's essentially a fatiguing condition. And although it's technically inactive at the moment, I've got a lot of permanent mild symptoms due to the damaged intestine and scarring. So I get tired really easily. So I, even if I wanted to do the, again, inverted fingers, you know, hustle and grind thing, I can't because I'm going to get tired really quickly. So what I wanted to do was, how can I get as much as I can out of the little time that I have available? And that was, you know, sort of 2001, 2002 back then. It was out of necessity. These days it's out of choice. I don't want to spend my time in front of the computer doing the usual things, work, 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 grind, 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 because you've got little time often to enjoy the pleasures of life. So it's finding that balance between the things that you have to do and the things that you want to do, and combining them so that you've got all these things that you love doing and you're not wasting your time doing things that you essentially hate, that for most people are just unnecessary. So that's unhustled. It's getting people to stop doing the things that they hate, do more of the things that they love, and start enjoying the things that they want.
That is a really short version of the unhustle, and I feel like it really captures a lot of concepts people want. Before we go into it, though, we heard about your story, your disease also you mentioned. I'm wondering if you could share with us how you've grown to cope with it, because some people will say, like, why me? And then they'll play victim. And yeah. I'm wondering if you could share a little bit of that with us.
Oh, where'd you start with that? You know, I think it's the difference in mindsets, because a lot of people, regardless of their personal situation, they will perhaps default to the woe is me type of attitude. But in my situation, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to default to what everyone else might stereotypically default, you know, why me, why this, and kind of wallow in self-pity. I didn't want that because it was just unproductive. I was just thinking, to be fair, I had a priest stand over me and he basically said to me, knocked on the door and said, son, do you want the last rites? And my immediate knee-jerk reaction was no. You know, and if you wouldn't mind, would you leave? I felt that that was giving up. So that's really started me thinking as to what I'd, all the things that I'd left undone. So rather than spend the time, and again, if you can probably appreciate, I was very seriously ill at that point in my time. And rather than just sit there and accept it, I refused to give in. And it got me thinking about all the things that I'd not done and yet to do, and all the things and dreams and desires that I wanted to achieve, you know, both in my business life and in my personal life. And that kind of just, for me, it just flicked the switch on mindset to waiting for something to happen versus going to generate something for yourself. Does that kind of make sense? I kind of struggle to explain this sometimes because it is more to do with mindset rather than anything practical or tactical.
I mean, I really like that mindset approach, and it really comes down to how you view the situation we're in. I think you explained that very nicely, and some of these topics are not necessarily easy to cover, but any insights really make a big difference, and I feel like your insight, I mean, for anyone who may feel like they're a victim or may feel like something unfair happened, I mean, if you just take those words to heart.
Yeah, I suppose I think it's also worth noting that not everyone has that life-changing experience that gives you a kick up the backside. I think for a lot of people, I mean, prior to that, I think to kind of give people a little bit of insight as to, well, what do you do if you don't have that life-changing experience? Because again, not everyone does. But for the people who do, it is a life-changing experience. So how can you recognize that something needs to change in yourself, in your actions? Again, for many years before that, I was, you know, the way that you know when you're looking for something, you don't know what you're looking for, but you know that you're searching. And yeah, for either opportunity or business or life, again, whatever it is that you're looking for in your life at that moment, you know that you're searching. Again, you don't necessarily know what you're searching for, but you know that you've not found it yet. And again, it's a little bit intangible, but you might be doing a lot of reading, another book, another course, another, you know, taking your vision, your viewpoints into a different direction. And that was the experience that I had. And that's probably the experience that a lot of people have when they know that they want something more. They get to the next kind of juncture, the fork in the road, if you like, and they're wondering where to go next. And if you find yourself in that experience of looking for the next thing, then you know that things have to change. And I think it's very worth thinking about just pausing, because it's very easy to keep in that searching and looking mode. And it's certainly well worth taking some time just to take stock, you know, start writing a list of all the things that you want out of life, and not just necessarily, again, more from a tactical viewpoint of, I want a new car or a new watch, or I want a new business, or I want whatever the thing is that you desire. Think about maybe the lifestyle that you want. Think about the destination that you want to end up at, and then start to work towards how you can accomplish that end goal. And then it starts to become easier. You start having a more focused search to help you achieve the end results, whatever the thing is, whether it's life, personal, business, you know, whatever the thing is. That gives you a little bit more of a structure to where to start searching and which direction to take, because otherwise you're going to be, you know, again, if you're a ship on an ocean, you've not got a navigator, you've not got a captain, you're just looking for whatever the next thing, the next opportunity is. What most people experience with a life-changing experience is they suddenly get absolute crystal clarity of what they want. So that's what I'm suggesting for the people who haven't had that life-changing experience. Just press pause. on whatever you're doing and give some serious consideration to what do I want. You know, if we fast forward 10 years into the future or 20 years into the future, what if you could wave a magic wand and have everything that you desired? And I don't mean materialistically, just what would your life be like? How do you envisage that happening? For me, I don't want to be working all day. I want to have, as you know, lots of free time. I want to be paid very well for what I do. So I've constructed my life around that vision of how I want to live my life. And everything up to that supports that lifestyle, the way that I want to live and how I want to be in my future self. And that'll give you that direction that most people who have that life-changing experience get, because it's a sudden jolt for most people, but not everyone gets that. So give serious thought to where you want to be in life.
And it's really interesting. We think, I mean, we're so much in motion where, I mean, I mentioned that whole unfair thing. I mean, like, few of us have had that kind of life-changing thing happen to us, but in the whole busyness, like, anything that feels unfair can really carry a lot of weight on that individual, even though it's something that you look at different perspectives, it's minor relative to some of the other things that are happening. And it's really great for us to take that advice Phil said, hit that pause button, think about what we really want, and actually going towards those things that we really want. Part of Phil's lifestyle was being able to still serve his clients, give them that great experience, but also not work as many hours. And Phil went from 14 hours of working each day, even with his condition, to now under an hour of work per day. And I wonder if you could share with us how you were able to make that transition, because I know that's something a lot of people would be interested in.
Yeah, make it once, sell it twice. That's the short answer. No, seriously though, I mean, when you start to put, this comes back to that vision. What do you want? How do you accomplish that? So when you've got that end goal in mind, how can I create something once and sell it twice or three times or four times? And what I was doing back then was selling time for money. And that's like what everyone else did. We call that a job, whether you are hired by someone else to do the thing, or you might be the owner, the proud owner of your own job. You're still selling time for money. So when you're trying to think about how you can start to grow and scale a business that doesn't involve that, what can you do that doesn't involve selling your time for money? And that really is the nub of it, if you like. So if you can, for me, I was quite fortunate that I was thinking about a more of a subscription type business where, again, you create it once or you sell it once, but people will pay you for the same thing each and every month for the duration that they want to continue getting the thing. Again, a simple thing would be, just one of the things that I do in my other businesses is I do a newsletter service. So every day or every week or every month, you can, you know, get a digest of something. You know, at its most basic, people will pay you to summarize the day's news for them. And they get that every day or every week or every month, you know, whatever the thing is. Just a very simple idea. But it doesn't have to be revolutionary. You do the work once. If you're reading the daily news anyway and you can summarize it, people will pay you for the privilege of sending you the summary and a link just as a newsletter service. And it's not that time intensive, but you can get paid every day, every week, every month for doing the same thing, the thing that you're enjoying doing. Again, the same principle of subscriptions and doing it once and getting paid twice or three or four or five times. You know, if you're you can do this in the real world. If you're a florist or a barber or an engineer, you know, there's got to be something in your existing business, the day to day, that people will pay for the security of knowing that they can pick up a phone and you'll be out there. Maybe it's an emergency service. If you're a florist, maybe you arrange where you every 3 or 4 or 5 days you go and take a fresh bouquet around for the receptions or all the receptions or the office or, you know, wherever it is. You know, you can get that subscription business where you don't have to try and sell to a new customer every day. You've already got that pool of customers. So, you know, a big part of what I do is getting people to see where the recurring income is in their business so that they can create it once and sell it 4, 5, 6 times, you know, every week, every month, every year, because you don't have to resell to an existing customer. You've just got to prove the value of them staying.
And I like that recurring income model because it provides more stability. It provides
Absolutely.
You know you're going to...
It's cash flow.
Exactly, I mean,
A big reason why a lot of businesses fail is their lack of cash flow. I mean, we've all been there. You know, it's like, oh, bugger, where are the bills going to get paid this month? You know, if you've got cash flow, if you know you've got receivables every single month, or at the very least, you know, 60, 70, 80% of last month's customers are going to still be with you this month, because there's going to be some drop off and some, you know, new customers. It's just the nature of it. But you know you've got money coming in every month. That's cash flow. That's the lifeblood of a business. And that means that you can then either work less or start to scale up in other areas of the business.
Yeah, and also that, I mean, with some business owners, they have this one big product launch each year and they hope it makes it. But if that product launch doesn't make it, then that's a lot of extra income they're missing out on. So it's definitely great to have those recurring sources, not have one customer be more than 10% or 20% of your income, because then if that person leaves, it's going to have a big dent on your income. So it's also good to spread it out a little bit.
I always find it funny that many people advocate the use of product launches, and they'll do one every quarter, every 6 months, or maybe every year. It should launch the product. It shouldn't be a business model. The clue's in the name. you do that. Let's change the name for a moment. It's the grand opening. You do it once in your business. You don't need to do it every 3, 6, 12 months. You know, if you put had a bricks and mortar business, it's the grand opening. It's the ribbon cuts. You do it once. That's it. It's not a business model.
That is definitely an interesting way to look at it. That, I mean, it is.
Don't get me wrong. It's lucrative. It is lucrative. Don't get me wrong. It works, but you shouldn't have to do it every 3 months, every 6 months, every 12. You shouldn't have to keep doing the grand opening experience. You only get to do the grand opening once.
And I mean, we have the. I feel like a lot of this conversation so far has been about setting the foundation, knowing what kind of model we need. Like, okay, we know we need a recurring, it's better to have that. I mean, it's good to have products like books and training courses, because those boost authority. They're different offerings to your audience, but it's one-off payments, while recurring obviously has a lot of different advantages to it. But let's talk about actually getting the paying customers. So whether it's a client for one of our services or a paying monthly customer for a newsletter, how would you approach acquiring those people?
I think just to kind of go back and add another layer onto what you're asking me earlier is start thinking about higher priced items. That might be another extra dimension to layer on top of it, because if you've got a higher value product offering, then you don't have to sell as many of them to get the same type of customer. So that then means that you can start to acquire higher value customers. Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
Okay, so I mean, if you think about it, the same effort goes into a $10 sale versus a $10,000 sale. It's the same, pretty much the same conversation. All right, there may be a little bit more thinking between the $10,000 sale and a $10 sale, but the reality is the conversation is essentially the same. If you can demonstrate that somebody needs the thing that you've got and that you can justify the value of a $10,000 price tag, then that person's going to buy it. And it's the same thing with a $10 item. You know, if you can demonstrate that that person needs it and that they want it, then they're going to make the sale. It's the same process that's involved. So again, put your prices up and start, or maybe create products or promote products that are higher value, because the same type of customers are going to be interested in those products. Again, as long as you can demonstrate the value of it, you will get the same sale. Does that make sense? So yeah. Part of it is look for higher value products. I mean, that was certainly one of the traps that I fell into. When I first started out online, it was I had a really pilot high, sell it cheap attitude. It was, you know, $30, $50 items. It was still subscription-based, but it was $30, $50 items. And, you know, that creates its own problems, its own issues, because you've now got potentially an army of people who are, they don't value what you've got. It's a commodity because it's cheap by comparison to many other products, perhaps. they're not really seeing the value of it. It's just something that they buy. But if, when you start putting your prices up, it stops becoming a commodity. It stops becoming comparable to someone else based on price. And when you can start to demonstrate the value of what you're doing, your skill, your expertise, your viewpoint on for what is all intents and purposes the same thing, then it becomes it's actually sometimes easier to sell a higher priced item compared to a lower priced item. Does that differentiation like ring true?
Yes.
So how do we then get those types of clients? Really drill down to the type of client that you want. So this is often referred to as niching down. It's dull, it's unpolished, it's unsexy. There's no push button solution for it. And for some people, it might even require a little bit of thinking. But niching down is probably the single biggest thing that you can do after you've put your prices up. Because when you can really figure out who you want to talk to about the thing that you do, then it becomes easier. Compare it to just standing in a room of crowded people saying, hey, I've got blue widgets. Does anybody want a blue widget? That's like the low-priced item. You're kind of hoping that someone would want your the thing that you do. Whereas when you start to get really focused on who you want to talk to, who would be interested in your thing, your product, your speciality, and you can demonstrate that value. It might be a 40-year-old male who lives in a certain area, who drives a certain car, who drinks a certain particular wine, they've got a certain lifestyle. You know, you can start to identify who your perfect client is. I sometimes think about this like if we imagine ourselves in the universe. You know, we live on planet Earth, we're in the universe. For most people, niching down is saying that I want to speak to people called Bob who live on planet Earth. And if we wrote that letter and gave it to the postman, that letter wouldn't get delivered to Bob who lives on planet Earth because it's a very big world out there. So that's what most people do when they niche down. They stand in the room and they go, hey, I've got a blue widget. I'll be over here if you want one. You know, dear Bob, who lives on planet Earth. And they think that that's enough. But when you get absolute crystal clear on who you want to speak to, you've got, you know, Mr. Smith, who lives on planet Earth, who lives on, you know, the United States, who lives in the state, the street address, the zip code. You've got absolute clarity on where that person is. Then you can go and start having a conversation with them. If we put a different spin on this, if you were to write that same letter and it was going to be a life-saving letter to that person, your ideal prospect, your ideal clients, you would want to make sure that you knew exactly where they lived so that you could send that letter. The postman could deliver this life-saving letter. But yet most people don't think about it like that. They just stop at dear Bob who lives on planet Earth. That letter's never going to get delivered. But when you have all the details, you have all the clarity of not just where they live, but, you know, the type of person, give them a name. I mean, for me, I mean, the type of person that I often work with is they're typically about 40. They've got a business. They're struggling. They're overworked. They've got maybe young or teenage kids and they're worried about the future because they're not seeing their kids grow up and they want to, you know, still earn the same type of money, or maybe they want to earn more money. So now we're talking about the psychographics, the things that are keeping them up at night. They want to work less, enjoy some more free time, but not at the sacrifice of not of worrying about how the bills are getting paid at the end of the month. You know, does that kind of level of detail make sense? That's what I mean by getting the address to put on that letter that could save someone's life. You know, it's the demographics and the psychographics of that person so that you can go and start conversation with them. And it becomes easier to say, hey, are you struggling with this problem? And they're going to either say yes or no. And if they say yes, then you can have a slightly longer conversation with them. And if they say no, then you're going to have a very short conversation. But you're not going to waste time trying to sell them something or promote something to them that they've got absolutely zero interest in. That's like standing up in that crowded room and saying, hey, I've got blue widgets. Does anybody want one?
Right.
Most people aren't interested. But if you could go, hey, there's a guy that looks like, you know, Bob, you know, he's 40, he's got young kids. You know, if you could have that conversation with lots of the same types of people, both from the psychographics and the demographics, because they're a perfect match, it's easier to start that conversation with them. Does that kind of like make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I like how you get really clear on who the avatar is, that specific person who, when you create content or you create this product, you are thinking of that person. And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about how we find those specific people and what seems to work the best. Like, I know Facebook ads work pretty good. Some people really go by content marketing, others go by referrals. I'm wondering, what do you believe works best when it comes to actually being able to find the people who we define as our avatar?
Let's just draw a distinction between the two. You've asked me two questions there. You've asked me, how do we find the people that we can, how do we find potential ideal clients? Strategically, we want to niche down. And then you follow that up with a tactical question. Tactically, where are they? And they're two very different things. You need the strategy first of who your ideal client is. That's the strategy. That's the high level, the psychographics, the demographics. When you know that, part of that will be, where does that group of people hang out? Now, great thing is we've got the internet these days. You know, if you don't want to use the internet, you can go back to mailing lists and direct mail. There's information out there. But the point is where does your group of people hang out? You know, if I wanted to target entrepreneurs, I could go to entrepreneur type groups, magazines, and again, Facebook targeting, LinkedIn targeting. These are all places where my type of people hang out. And if you were into fitness, again, there's groups around fitness, there's magazines around fitness, there's dedicated websites that has nothing to do with Facebook, surprisingly, about fitness. You could go to the local gym or the local Weight Watchers, and there's a group of people locally that you could go and talk to tomorrow if you wanted to. So when you know who you want to speak to, the niching down, the psychographics, the demographics, and you've got that strategic knowledge of who your ideal client is, part of that is, where do they hang out? Either physically in a physical local location or digitally online, where are they? And then you can start to think about, okay, well, how do I get that letter that we were talking about? How do I get that message that could, because I'm going to assume that you've got something that could change someone's life in a big way or a small way, because otherwise, why are we in business? When you've got that, it then becomes easier to go and start conversations with those pockets of people, those groups of people who they might be in a Facebook group, they might be on Facebook advertising, they might be on LinkedIn. But when you know who you want to speak to, finding those groups of people becomes easier. It's not necessarily a case of Facebook's the place to be, or LinkedIn's the place to be, or private forums are the place to be. Where are your groups of people hanging out? And then go and hang out with them. Maybe they're on YouTube. But part of that initial strategic research will help you figure out, where's the biggest group of my perfect clients? Where are they hanging out? And then you can go and, if it's Facebook, go and do Facebook advertising. If it's LinkedIn, go and do LinkedIn. If it's YouTube, go to YouTube. If it's at the local town hall, because there's a meetup group there, that's where you want to go. Does that kind of make sense? Just drawing that distinction between strategic and tactical.
Yes, I like that. And also how the tactics differ for who your audience is, where they hang out the most. So, I mean, a lot of concept there.
Yeah, I mean, there's no single right answer. I think that most people go, I'm going to use Facebook advertising to advertise to my group of people, and all they've got is Bob who lives on planet Earth, and they're using Facebook ads to advertise to Bob who lives on planet Earth, and then they're struggling to make Facebook ads work because they're advertising to Bob who lives on planet Earth. You know, but you know, if you go to that strategic kind of level first and really get, you know, granular on who you want to speak to, it might be that Facebook ads is the place, but then you can start to put all those demographics and psychographics into the advertising platform of your choice. Or maybe there's organically you can go into Facebook groups or LinkedIn or YouTube or wherever your pockets of people are hanging out, and you can start to have an easier conversation because you've done all the hard work at that strategic level. Again, it's dull, it's unpolished, it's not sexy, but that is the secret sauce to making the tactical stuff work. That's how you make Facebook ads work, by figuring out who you want to speak to in the first place in as much detail as possible.
And again, I really like this focus on having that big picture before you try to interview these different tactics like Facebook ads, LinkedIn, YouTube, whatever it may be that works best for you. And not having this clear picture, I believe, holds a lot of people back from being able to work less and earn more. But as someone who helps people do just that and has been able to do it in his own life, I'm wondering if you could share with us a bunch of the different things that you believe hold people back from being able to live this kind of unhustle lifestyle where they're working less, earning more, and doing all the things they want to do.
People who do things unnecessarily. I think that's a big thing. You don't have to tweet. You don't have to Facebook. You don't have to YouTube. You don't arguably have to create lots of content. I mean, it might be that that's what you enjoy doing, so it's okay to do it. So I think people get stuck doing things that they don't like doing. And if you can, here's something that you can do. If you want to get on, the quickest way to get unhustled is to stop doing things that you don't like doing or unnecessary for you to do. So what you should do, get a sheet of paper, put it landscape, draw two lines so you've got three columns. In the left-hand column, write down a list of all the things that you love doing, either in business or in life. Let's just stick with business for the moment because that's kind of the focus of what we're talking about today. So all the things that you love doing, the reason why you got into business in the first place, that goes in the I love column. Then in the center column, you're going to have all the things that you do for your business, but you're not in love with. I don't like accounting or bookkeeping. I've got to do it for the business. I don't necessarily want to do it, but that's going to go in the center column. And then in the right-hand column, all the things that you hate doing. You're doing them for whatever reason. You're doing them. You're tweeting, you're YouTubing, you're content writing, you're doing all the things that you've been told to do that you've Frankensteined together that you've just added into your daily business routine. And you hate doing them. That goes in that column. If they were essential to the business, they'd be in the center column, but they're not. They're in the I hate column. And here's what you can do. Just draw a line through them all and stop doing them. Because if they're not contributing to the business, they'd be in the center column. As they're not contributing and you hate doing them, stop doing them. Now, if you like tweeting, it's going to be in the love column. Can you see what we're doing here? So it's like if you love doing it, it's going to be in the love column. If it's essential for the business but you don't like doing it, it's going to be in the center column. If you hate doing it and it's not supporting the business activities, then stop doing them. The chances are that you can probably find anywhere from 40 to 60% of your time back by stopping doing the things that you hate doing. Because you typically spend twice as long doing them because you hate them. So it's just pointless doing them. And when the first time I did, I have done this many times, but the first time you did it, I was like, why am I tweeting? I don't tweet. I don't like tweeting. So I stopped tweeting. I didn't know why I was doing it in the first place. I couldn't prove that it was tangibly providing to the bottom line in my business. Is it a revenue generating activity is a good way to determine if it should be in the center column, the things that you've got to do versus the things that you hate doing and you don't know why you're doing them. If it's not producing revenue, don't do it. Put a line through it. And that is the quickest way to get yourself unhustled. And you'll probably find that you've got 60% of your time. Most people who I do this exercise with, they end up between 40 and 60% of their time back because they're not doing things that they enjoy doing and they can't tangibly provide a reason for doing it again in the future. And you'll get half your life back. You really will. And then that means that you can focus on systematizing the things that you are in that center column, the things that are producing revenue, but you don't really enjoy doing. So can you hand them off to someone else? Can you hire someone in to do them? You know, can you automate it? I mean, accounting software, I mean, keeping your receipts in order, you can take a little photo of them with a lot of the accounting software these days. You know, can you speed up the process of your bookkeeping by using a piece of software? You know, so things like that or email or whatever the thing is, you can put a system in place so that you can streamline and make it a little bit faster. And when you've done that, you can probably hire someone in to do it for you because, again, if it's systematizable, is that a word? It is now. If it's systematizable, then you don't need to be doing it. It's not in the love column, so why are you doing it? But now you've got a process in place. You can get someone to do it. You can hire an intern. You can get a free intern. You can hire someone in somewhere, outsource it, whatever the thing is. But you can get someone to do all the things that are essentially repetitive minimum wage tasks and get someone else to do them. And then eventually you're going to be left with all the things that you love. The reason why you got into business in the first place, the reason why you get up in the morning, the reason why you quit the day job in the first place, because now you're just focused purely on the I love. This is the I love column. That's the zone of genius. So when you've got the hate column deleted, you could probably do that tomorrow. Just stop doing all the things that you hate. Systematize the things that you love. Just put a little bit of a reality check on that. That could take anywhere from a week to 3 months, depending on how intense your business is. Again, depends on what's involved. But just deal with things one at a time. Systematize everything. Put it in a Word document. Use a screen recorder, a free tool like Use Loom. You can just go through and I'm going to click this. I'm going to click that. I'm going to do this. Boom, you've got a system in place. Hand it off to someone else. And then you just left with all those things that you love doing. And now you've probably got, at this point, 60, 70, 80% of your time back. You're going to go from a 60-hour work week to a 20-hour work week just by focusing on the things that you love and systematizing and putting processes in place for the things that they're essential but you don't like doing. That's it. That's how you get unhustled.
That's a really interesting breakdown. And the things we hate doing, they're going to take longer because we are going to approach it with a bad mindset, first of all. It's like, I got to do this again. And
yeah. Yeah, no, but that's exactly it. You end up just going, think about what did you do, the last thing that you did that you think, oh, I've got to do this tomorrow. Just don't do it. If it's not producing revenue for the business, don't do it. Why are you doing it in the first place? If you don't like writing emails, don't write emails. If you like tweeting, then tweet. But as long as you can justify doing it in the first place, that's the whole point of this process. You've got to be able to justify a reason for doing it. Again, if you like writing 3,000 word articles and it's producing results for you, then that's the thing that you should focus on.
And I do like that idea of justifying every action that you do. And something else that we should justify are all the habits that are in our lives. And I'm wondering, with habits in mind, if you could share with us some of the habits that you do that you would consider essential to your success.
The filter that I run everything through, two filters. Will this make me happy and will I be unhustled? So if it's not going to make me happy, I'm not going to do it. If it's going to take up a lot of my time, I'm not going to do it. And that's it. So everything, so this comes back to what we said right at the beginning, is have a reason. What's the big goal? What's the vision? Where's the destination that you want to be? When you know that destination, everything should be working towards getting to that destination. For me, it's to get paid very well for not selling my time for money. I'm selling my expertise, my knowledge, my know-how. That's what I'm doing. And it doesn't require me doing a 60-hour work week to do it. So everything has got to be, will it make me happy? Is it interesting? And if I'm going to be selling time for money, then I'm not really going to be doing it because I don't want to sell my time for money. I don't want to spend hours and hours and hours doing something that is not really a revenue generating activity. Does that kind of make sense? So have those qualifiers. You know, what are your filters for not just business, but life? You know, will this make me happy? Well, why are you doing it? If it's not going to make you happy, why are you doing it? If it's a revenue generating activity, then yeah, maybe you're going to do it. But the reality is, will it make me happy? No. Will it is this going to be an unhustled way of doing it? And that's just my way of saying, is it going to take a lot of time for me to do this? Because if it is going to take a lot of time, I've then got to really justify, is it a lot of time once? Meaning, can I do it once and sell it 7, 8, 9 times in the future? Then maybe it is worth it because it's time now, but I'll be able to leverage it because I can do it once and sell it twice, is what we said earlier. So they're the filters that I run things through. Does that kind of make sense there?
Yes, and I really like how you have these different qualifiers, these different filters, because if you don't have those, you're just randomly throwing different things into your schedule because maybe someone said this thing gives you this kind of revenue, or you should be doing X to get Y without really thinking, does this really fit my qualifier, my filter? So I really like that habit that you have in play to really reduce the amount of distraction in your life.
Yeah, I mean, if someone does say you should try this, I'm not saying don't do it. Test it. You know, give it a month, 3 months, 6 months, however long you determine to test something. And then you can decide for yourself, okay, well, is it worth my time to continue doing this in the future? And if it's taken too much time, or, you know, it's too technical or whatever the thing is, then yeah, you might remove it and then you'll try something else and say, is this better or worse than the previous thing or the next thing that I'm trying? So it's just that constant cycle of, you know, what's the best thing for me? All right. Someone else said that X, Y, Z is the best thing. That's okay. I'm going to try it. I'm going to see if it is a good, you know, use of my time and resources. And if it's not, then maybe I'll do something else or try something else. I'll experiment. But the point is, you've got to test it. You've got to be able to measure it. And don't just do it for the sake of doing it, because then that means it's in the hate column. You don't know why you're doing it. So if you've always got that justifiable reason, that's always going to be in the center column. You know, all right, it's in the center column. I've got to do this because I'm testing it. And I'm, you know, and then it's either going to stay in the center column, you're going to systematize it and hand it off to someone, or it's not revenue generating, you're not enjoying it, it's going to move over to the hate column, you're going to stop doing it. And it is literally as simple as that. When you start to have these filters, and you're not just with business, but you can also do this in your life. You know, why are you doing things that you don't enjoy doing? You know, in your personal life as well. You know, will this make me happy? You know, it is sad as it may be, but you know, there's groups of people that I've stopped hanging around with because I didn't enjoy their company. They were depressing. They were negative. They were always talking down. They always saw the worst in things. And that makes me sad. I don't want to be unhappy. I want to gain pleasure out of the company that I spend with. You know, and it's the same process as, is this going to make me happy? Yes or no? Is it a good use of my time? Am I enjoying the evening? Yes or no? All right, no, I'm not going to do it again. Yes, I'd love to spend more time with these groups of people or this situation. It's that same process. And again, when you can figure out what your filters, what your questions are, then things become easier. I mean, perhaps if you don't know what your initial filter is, the easiest question to ask is why? Why am I doing this? You know, until you figure out your own, your personal set of filters that helps you towards your personal destination, why am I doing this? And if you can't give yourself a reason why, then why are you doing it? I don't know why I'm doing it. Well, don't do it.
Phil, lots of great insights. I mean, that question, why, is such a, it's a frequently asked question, because I do ask people for a question that they believe we should ask ourselves more often. You've thrown a lot of those at us today, and really thinking about why we're doing what we're doing can really reveal a lot of different things about our lifestyle, about our choices. And another thing that can really reveal a lot of things and help us move forward is reading the right books. And with that in mind, I'm wondering if you share with us three books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
I'm going to give you one book called Niche Down. I don't know if you read this one or have you heard of it. It's a newer book, but it's about how to, well, surprisingly, the clue's in the title. I don't know if you caught that, but you know, you can guess it, can't you? It's about niching down. It's about different ways that you can do that and the importance of niching down. Most people get stuck into not niching down, you know, the Dear Bob Planet Earth experience. And what you'll find is you'll make more money easier when you figure out how to go many layers deep than perhaps what you're already at, niching down. So it's called Niche Down. It's by Christopher Lockhead. Again, it's a very good book, well worth reading. As to other business books, I don't actually read a lot of business books. There's many messages that are said the same way in lots of different perspectives. What I like to do is I do a lot of reading, but I do a lot of pleasure reading. I like science fiction. I like science fantasy. I like seeing different ways of viewing the world. Not just, is that make sense? I mean, if you think about Ready Player One, just as an idea, it spins a different world, a virtual world, an imaginary world, and it just allows you to have the freedom to open your mind and see things from different perspectives. So that's what I like. I use reading as an escapism, and it allows me that free thoughts or that free process of thinking so that I'm not locked into one dimension.
And it's really interesting that you have that variety where you do get those different perspectives. So the books that Phil mentioned, they will be in the show notes. MarkBurdy.com/E312. Also throwing content marketing secrets, which based on the theme of this episode, the topic is in the title, content marketing secrets. That will also be in the show notes. And I know you've given us a lot of different questions throughout our time together for us to ask ourselves, the why question, the question about what we're filtering, but I'm wondering if you could give us one more question that you believe we should be asking ourselves more often?
Will this make me happy? Without hesitation, that is the single biggest thing that motivates me at the moment, and has done for the last several years. Will this make me happy? If you can put everything that you do through that filter, then that's probably going to, it will make your life better. Because if you're doing things that make you miserable, you're going to have a miserable life. I want to enjoy myself. I've got a stress-related illness, so I'm looking to minimize that all the time. And, you know, will it make me happy? So that is the single question that I would encourage everyone to start asking themselves.
Phil, that is a really awesome question. I mean, that really is the cherry
on top.
It's
profound. It's profound.
I mean, it is a great question, and it really gets us to think about what we're doing. And for people who are wondering, what can I be doing to achieve this lifestyle Phil mentioned? I know Phil has private strategy sessions that he's offering. I'm wondering, Phil, if you could share with us a little bit of where we can learn more about that and finding you on other places as well.
Sure. If you, I'm actually just redesigning my site at the moment. So if you want to go to the main site at unhustled.com, you can contact me through there. But depending on when this is released, if you want to contact me directly, I'd be happy to talk. Anyone who wants a free strategy session, I'll be happy to take you through how you can, you know, find the resources in your own business and free up your time so that you can start down this journey of, you know, working less and earning more. And just send me an email. It's phil@unhustled.com.
Phil, thank you so much for sharing those resources in place for us to contact you for that free private strategy session. All that will be in the show notes. But once again, Phil, I can't thank you enough for coming on Breakthrough Success and sharing all of your great insights with us today.
Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Want to dominate the podcasting industry? Now you can with your free copy of my book, Podcast Domination. You'll learn how to launch, grow, and monetize your very own show. And whether you are a beginner or an expert, this book has a lot of golden nuggets for you. We'll cover the cost of producing this book. All we ask is that you cover the shipping. To get your copy, head over to markgaberti.com/PD.